You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast brought to you by Lakewood Chev and the 2017 Chevrolet Silverado. 0% financing for 84 months, plus up to 10 grand in price reduction. This is better than employee pricing and better than 20% of MSRP. Check it out only at Lakewood Chev. Rashog, it's your first hit in 2.5 months. Feel free to be on time.
Oh, buddy, I'm sitting in my office, got all my internet tabs open, ready to go, totally prepared. Something's wrong with your guys' phones because my phone was not ringing.
Majot, I was watching Majot dial it like 3 times. It's funny. Anyway, how was your wedding?
I'm on Roger's service.
Oh, well, that would explain it. How was your wedding?
Oh, wedding was fantastic, man. Yeah, thanks for asking. It was great.
How was your video?
Good times. How was the video?
Yeah. Didn't Parker send you a video?
Oh, that. Oh, yeah. What a train wreck.
Everyone was very positive? I'm assuming everyone was very positive in what they said to you?
Yeah. Yeah, everyone was super positive, guys. Thanks.
I was. I
really appreciate that.
I thought I was pretty positive in my video donkey message.
It was basically me standing there in front of my family and my new family and my friends for 15 minutes getting absolutely taken apart. Like, it was a roast. I got absolutely obliterated.
Can I see it? Because I only got to see what Struds and I did. I never got to see the other ones.
I don't know if I want to show you guys. Like, I don't know why I would.
I'd love to see it. Well, we'll ask Parker.
We'll ask Parker. He'll give it to
us. That's no big deal.
Yeah, I think he'll give
Duffy
it.
And McKenzie from the Trade Center desk. Ripping me to shreds.
Yeah.
And Dreger. Yeah.
Thanks
for that, guys. Appreciate that.
Did your wife enjoy it?
Oh, hell yeah. Everybody enjoyed it. All night long, everybody was coming up to me going, that was the best thing I've ever seen. So, for everyone else, it was lots of fun, guys. Ha ha. I just sat there like the hits just kept on coming. Everybody, too, from Rob Williams to Graham Neal to Jermaine Franklin to Farhan Lalji to you two meatheads to those donkeys from the morning. It was just nonstop over and over and over again.
I heard Frey's had a really good line.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why he felt it. I was even told they had to edit out a bunch of Frey's stuff because it was even less appropriate than what was in there.
Oh, which is funny because you'd think that guy would be appropriate, but evidently not.
Right. Morning show host is always, they know the perfect touch for every moment, right?
Let's talk about the Edmonton Orders.
Sure.
Obviously, they have to be concerned about, for a team that doesn't have a boatload of prospects, not that they necessarily need them right away because a lot of their best players are young guys anyway, but it's safe to say they're being extremely cautious this time around with Tyler Benson to ensure he does not come back until he is officially 100% healthy.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to be. I mean, yeah, this has been the story of young Tyler Benson's junior and now his early pro career. So, yeah, they're going to have to be careful and they're going to have to wait. They're going to have to make sure because they have to put this in the rearview mirror. They invested a lot in this young guy and they need to just do whatever needs to be done to put all this in the rearview mirror so that he can move on and get to playing some hockey, right? That was the story of Oscar Klefbom in a lot of ways as well. Good, young, high draft pick who struggled with different types of injuries. And so until they just gave him all of the time he needed and then some and was able to put it behind him and get a real good, solid bit of traction underneath him. But the problem with Benson is he hasn't played enough hockey. He hasn't gotten any kind of traction in the last few years. And he's just, the wheels have been spinning. So you really have to worry about the overall development of a guy who's hurt as often as he is.
Well, Shogar, it's tough. And a player we both know well, Nolan Baumgartner. You know, he was a stud in junior, an absolute stud. Boom, blows up his left shoulder, comes back from that. Boom, blows up his right shoulder next year. And then what happens is you kind of get passed by because the team's like, well, we don't know if this guy's getting better or not. We can't judge because he's not playing. So, I mean, I think this is not do or die for Benson, but I think he needs to get a couple years of health to just push his skill set and career down the way a bit.
Well, the thing about him is, I mean, he was an exceptional minor hockey player, drafted very high in the bottom draft. But, I mean, look at his games played in the Dub, 30 and 33 right. The last couple of seasons. I mean, man, he just hasn't been able to get any measure of significant games in. No playoff games in that time at all, either with Vancouver. And so where is he at in his development? How can you expect him to be that far along? And so I think that they might have to be real patient with this player. They might have to kind of understand it with the lack of games that even when he does get playing, I think everybody needs to reset their gun sights a little bit and change expectations for where this guy is and where they expect him to be. I think they should probably, people just need to, you know, when he gets healthy, just give him a blank slate for the first year and let him get his feet underneath him, because he's going to come with expectations. I mean, he was a number 32 overall draft pick. He's a local guy, and it's not an ideal situation for him. So the pressure needs to come off and the focus needs to be on his health and getting some games in.
Would you have seen positive, negative at all to having Puljujärvi go to the camp this weekend?
For the rookie camp?
Yeah.
I wouldn't send him there.
Why not?
I don't know. I mean, he's got a year in the American Hockey League. He's got an NHL look. I think you're better off to bring him in and treat him like the rest of the guys from the beginning and give him a good opportunity to make the team right from the word go at main camp. I mean, I guess there'd be some positives to it, and then he'll get some good ice time in and get some game action in, and he'll hit camp with his wheels fully going, which would be good. You know, but at the same time, I think you do risk putting a guy in a position where he's, I don't know how that would affect him. You know, I don't know how that would affect him. Whereas you bring him in day one of training camp, he's got Jokinen in there with him and for him, and he's, you know, the expectation is for him to make the team this year. That's what their expectation is of him. That's what his expectation is of himself. And I don't know if you send second-year pros to rookie camp if they're expected to make the team, do you?
Do you expect, because Struds thinks he starts in the American League, you think he starts a lock for sure in the NHL?
If it's crystal clear that he doesn't belong, then he'll start in the American Hockey League. But I think with the guy's skill set, he's going to stand out. It'll be interesting because I think Yamamoto is a player that could probably kind of turn some heads and maybe get a little bit of traction and get people talking about him. And he's going to be competing for one of those skill spots. And I'm not saying he's going to make the team, but what I'm saying is, I mean, he's a guy that can put pressure on someone like Puljujärvi in that spot. The way that he plays the game and his speed and aggressiveness, he's kind of a lot of things that Puljujärvi is not. He kind of is. And so it'll be interesting to see if Yamamoto comes in and gets some early buzz and gets some early juice, I guess you'd say, that, you know, how Puljujärvi will push back. So there's going to be some real competition for him, for sure. But I do expect him to push for a spot, and I do expect that they are going to give him absolutely every opportunity possible before sending him down.
That's really interesting to bring that up about Yamamoto, because he does play the type of game that's flashy, and I say that in a very positive way. I mean, you do tend to notice him, right? The way and I've only seen him play in small little shots and some things on YouTube, but you notice him. You know, he does things that are like, oh my God, you see what he did with the puck, and that's exciting and fun to watch. But I wonder if that might be harder to sustain as, you know, you cut down,
right,
and you get to regular season. And maybe now, you know, you're not going to fool, Alex Edler. He's seen that from Sidney Crosby. He's seen it from a lot of guys. But I think that the advantage that, yes, he has, that he does have that bigger frame that might be able to play that full 200-foot game. I made the comment today, and Gregor's made it earlier, but maybe it's time that we kind of rejig what we think Puljujärvi is or could be. You know, I don't think he's lining. But could it be something else that's maybe as valuable for a longer term here at the Oilers?
Well, I mean, and I wasn't listening to the conversation when you guys said it. I've never thought that he was Line A. I've never thought that was, I mean, did we maybe expect him to step in and make more of an impact early because of his size and his strength and all those things? For sure. But, I mean, we witnessed firsthand a guy with size and some offensive prowess come in and really struggle with the speed of the National Hockey League, right? And I'm talking about Leon Draisaitl. Man, you remember his first year, it was like, holy smokes, it's like he's stuck in third gear. He can't find fourth or fifth. You know, 0 to 60, he's just super slow. 60 to 100, his speed was good. And it took him experiencing it, tasting it, seeing it, to understand what needed to be done. And then he put the work in, fixed the problems, and came back. And now we've seen the caliber of player he's turned into. So, I mean, I don't think that we need to lower expectations for Puljujärvi at all in terms of what a quality prospect he is. I just think you need to kind of keep an open mind about what the pacing is going to be. I think he's going to be an excellent NHL player. He looks like he's got all of the tools, looks like he's got everything in place. Now, whether it takes him 2 years to get there, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, he has everything he needs to get there. It's just putting it all together. So I don't think you need to recalibrate what your expectation is of Jesse Puljujärvi overall when he develops into what he's going to be.
Reiner Schalk from TSN joins us. Yeah, I'm not sure I ever see him as a high point total guy, only because he's never done that at any other level. But, you know, we'll wait and see. You know, Laine was a sniper and put up some pretty big numbers. Puljujärvi's size, though, I just wonder, because he's such a big kid, I see him as a little bit of a guy who, early on, people will get frustrated because they'll look at Keith Tkachuk, or sorry, Matt Tkachuk and some others, who are all also a year older than him, and say, well, geez, he's not there yet. But it will might take him, but I could see him at 23, 24 having a massive breakout year.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, so let's revisit the comment about you don't see him being an offensive, necessarily a big offensive type guy. Well, why are you drafting him fourth overall? Like, if they don't think he has that ability in him, where they're drafting a third liner with the number four pick, like, is he a top player or is he not?
But if you look at the history of stats, if you've never put up big numbers before the NHL, puts them up? And he's never done it.
But let's look where he played and how old he was when he played there. Right. So, how old was he in 14-15 when he played his first year in Carpet? And then his second year, I mean, he went up to 28 points in his 50 games there, but he was young. Like, what was he? 16,
he was 17, and Sebastian Aho was 18, and Aho had 46 points. Right. Like, certain offensive guys find way. That's all I'm saying, to put up points. I'm not saying he can't. I'm just saying, if I look at the trends of point producers, to think that he's going to be a high-end, could he maybe turn out to be a 60-point guy? Sure. But if you're expecting him to be 75, like an elite-level scorer, I think that would, based on all of the knowledge I have from what his numbers have proven before, that to me would be an outlier.
Right, and I don't know that they drafted him thinking he was going to be a 70- or 80-point player, but just the way you said that, I wasn't sure what you meant in terms of, I mean, I think that if you're drafted fourth overall and you're a big, talented, you know, decent skating skill player, you don't take a guy number four overall unless you think he's going to be able to get you 50 or 60 points one day. I mean, you don't use that pick for that player.
Yeah, but lots of teams have, sadly. Tom Isicki, we go down the list.
Right, but they never do thinking that. So they must believe that there is offensive potential in Jesse Puljujärvi that will justify taking him with the fourth overall pick. I mean, he's not going to be it's not like he's got a whole bunch of other attributes in his game where they were drafted him for that other dynamic. I mean, they've drafted him for his size and his offensive ability.
But he's really good two-way player already at his young age, right? He's always been talked about that. And some people might cringe at this one, but could he be a similar, maybe better finisher than Benoit Pouliot, who was also a fourth overall pick?
Yeah, everybody's cringing. You just made everybody cringe. I don't know. Puljujärvi showed flashes throughout his career, but overall, I would say never really caught the potential that he was drafted for, and that would be a disappointment if that's where Puljujärvi landed, you know, being drafted fourth overall where he was, and if that's the way it went. I feel like that would be a little bit of a disappointment. But, I mean, listen, it's going to take a little bit of time, and I think that it was a learning experience for him the first year. The one thing I'm going to be looking for with Puljujärvi, and it's in training camp and in the exhibition season, I'm going to be looking for his effort level. Because one of the words that came up a couple of times when I chatted with scouts who had watched him play late in the year, and I never asked about this specifically, but it came up, and I spoke with three separate scouts, and it was kind of described in different ways, but the feeling was the same. There was a little bit of a concerning nonchalance to his attitude on the ice, to his overall effort level on the ice. And that definitely raised a bit of a red flag for me. Doesn't jive with what I saw from him at the NHL level earlier in the year. I thought he was a hard worker. But we'll watch it. I'm going to be watching for that because, now, sometimes big guys can just come across that way. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's what it was. But we'll see in the overall effort level, the work ethic, just how intense he is shift to shift, and see if there was anything to that those separate scouting reports.
Shocker, I want to change gears here. There's a report servicing out of, I believe, Vancouver that Cody Franzen has narrowed down his, or has been, you know, narrowed down to two teams, one team and then the Edmonton Oilers. So do you see, or do you like to see Cody Franzen joining the Oilers? And maybe a similar type contract as the great Chris Russell got last year.
$3 million?
Well, no, I'm just saying that a one-year contract. Oh, one-year contract. Okay. Okay, not the number, just a one-year contract. Like a, you know, people call it value contract, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Franz in the game. He's better in his early days. But the last few seasons, I don't know, guys. Like, do they need him? I mean, is there, I know that Sekar is hurt, but they're getting a little bit jammed up back there, aren't they?
Yeah, well, I guess maybe they want another veteran right shot defender. I think they would look at Franzen maybe to moonlight and switch off with Eric Graben, your third pair on your right side. That's really where I see him playing, and I don't see any other room for it. And I'm with you, Ashagar. If it's me, I would. I'm not sure he's any. Well, he's got way more offense than Mark Fain, but I don't think he skates well enough to play the attacking style defense that McClellan wants.
Right. And then, you know, I don't have his full rounded out stats up here, but has he been playing much power play time the last couple of seasons? Like, if it was 19 points last year, how many were on the power play? And 17 the year before, how many were on the power play? And do you want him playing on the power play? I mean, I think you want Klefbom on your power play, and I think you want Benning on your power play.
100%.
And so why, I mean, if Franzen needs to be on the power play to pick up points, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but I just don't know that you want to put veterans in front of Matt Benning. Why are you putting veteran players in front of Matt Benning in terms of opportunity? I think they need to just lean really hard on Benning and see what he can give them.
Yeah,
he might be able to play in the second pairing for the first 35 games of the year just fine.
Yeah, Franzen, he actually had the second most power play minutes on defense in Buffalo last season, but only had two power play points.
Okay.
It's not ideal.
So, I mean, Benning probably plays ahead of him on the second power play unit anyways, I suppose. But, I mean, you just gave Greiba a two-year deal. a two-year one-way deal. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just of the feeling, and Peter Chiarelli said it himself, like, why put a whole bunch of guys in line in front of young guys that you're wanting to create those opportunities for and give those opportunities to? The other guy that might surprise people is Ovi, too. He might come in and be a guy that people look at in camp and see. I mean, he's extremely smooth skating. Reminds me a little bit of Bomber, actually, Struds. Like, when you see him, the way he moves around on the ice, remember how Bomber used to just be, he'd just glide around out there, kind of, I don't know, hard to describe, but reminds me a little bit of him. And we may end up talking about him partway through training camp as a guy that might be able to stick around as that extra depth defenseman.
Shocker, good to have you back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good, guys.